Hi, I'm Tom Power. Welcome to Toy Harp, a podcast about bluegrass. This is the last episode of season two. Here from Nashville is my conversation with Allison Krauss.
I remember, you know, the first time I looked out in the audience and saw people singing words to our songs that only we had recorded. That was just a really crazy moment. Just never thought it'd end up being there. Never thought we'd hear back from Rounder. Yeah. Never thought we would hear from Rounder in the first place.
If this is your first time listening, you can hear full interviews with Jerry Douglas, Allison Brown, Bela Fleck, Larry Sparks, Jody Stecker, and so many more wherever you get your podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Later on.
From BGS, you're listening to The Shift List, where chefs talk about the music that fills their kitchens, restaurants, and recipes. I'm Chris Jacobs. Support for The Shift List comes from Nomad. Nomad is a Santa Barbara, California-based tech accessory company that specializes in leather and ruggedly engineered mobile accessories. I started using their Expedition charging cable for my iPhone, and this thing is tough. In other words, you can finally throw out the frayed white rubber charging cable that came with your phone. Head to hellonomad.com/BGS and use code BGS at checkout to receive 15% off any full-priced items through the end of January. And when you use the BGS code, you'll also be entered to win a $200 Nomad gift card, good for anything on the site, including their awesome phone cases with leather from the Horween Tannery in Chicago. hellonomad.com/BGS, 15% discount code BGS at checkout. Colin Stringer and Jeremy Wolf are two of the three chefs and founders of Nonesuch in Oklahoma City, an intimate 22-seat restaurant that focuses on cooking with ingredients that come exclusively from their native Oklahoma. In a landlocked state that rarely gets national recognition for its culinary ambition from any organization, Nonesuch was named Best New Restaurant in the Country by Bon Appetit magazine back in August, ahead of nine other restaurants from food capitals like Los Angeles, New York City, and Washington, D.C. The inventiveness and inspiration for Nonesuch began when Stringer and Wolf worked together at a supper club back in 2014 called Nani in the 100-year-old Victorian house that Stringer also lived in near the heart of Oklahoma City. Word grew around town about the semi-legal restaurant operation happening in Stringer's home, and it was eventually shut down by the city for operating without a license. So when Nonesuch opened back in October of 2017, it wasn't a coincidence that the dining experience felt intimate, familial, and hospitable. As Bon Appetit's editor-in-chief Andrew Knowlton wrote in his review of Nonesuch, the best analogy to describe the young chefs that run it are like brothers in a band, heads down, making incredibly beautiful music that they doubted anyone would ever hear. Well, a little over a year after their opening, Nonesuch is booked solid for the foreseeable future, and the guys are poised and focused to take on the newfound attention with a unique sense of artistry and a killer playlist. I spoke to chefs Colin and Jeremy before service the other week in Oklahoma City.
My name is Colin Stringer. I'm a cook in Oklahoma City. I'm the head chef at the restaurant Nonesuch.
Hello, I'm Jeremy Wolf. I also cook here in Oklahoma City, and I'm chef de cuisine of a restaurant called Nonesuch.
When did you open again?
October 4th, 2017.
Yeah. 2017. So you're over a year in. So you guys are in the middle of the restaurant cooking, right? Mm-hmm. Can you maybe describe the space itself and the environment and why music plays a particularly important role in the space?
For sure. We wanted to do an open kitchen concept this whole time. That's always been the plan. Just because we like going to those places, it's so fun to see the food being cooked in front of you. I think one thing that was really important to us from the beginning was that we really have to resonate like a pleasantness and a kindness to our guests. We've been to restaurants where you're right there with the chefs and they look pissed off, they look unhappy, and that was really kind of like, if you're that intimate in a space, like it was really important for us that like you get greeted by everyone, that everyone looks calm, that it's just, that it's a pleasant place to be in, especially being the only tasting menu in Oklahoma where people are already kind of hesitant, you know.
Not used to that experience.
Yeah, so that's why we wanted this kind of open space. But obviously, mm-hmm. That being said, we hear the music, the guests hear the music. It's a little U-bar that our servers are always in. So they're always with the guests. They're the ones that are,
okay,
you know.
But
just
you guys are
right there
behind the U, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right?
So there's open mm-hmm. shelves. Our seats 1 and 2, that's where we see our regulars and our VIPs. It's literally like, you know, from you to me across the table.
Okay.
They're right there with
yeah,
us.
Yeah, they sit against the kitchen wall kind of thing, situation. So they're 3 feet away from everything. They hear everything. Like, there's this, like, transparency through the space. If you can see everything, we don't have anything to hide. And I think that as far as music coming in, it kind of works as, like, it can be an icebreaker because it's very much can be intimidating to walk into the space and be like, oh, man, I've never eaten anything like this before. Like, I'm really uncomfortable. But then, like, you hear some nice music or something and you kind of, like, level out and you can kind of maybe relate to something. And then from there you start talking and then you get a little wine and then you start conversing with maybe the seats next to you or something. And then you're much more comfortable and we can kind of use that as a way to make it not feel like pretentious or intimidating or anything, because that's the last thing we want. We don't want you to feel challenged by this food. We just want you to come in, eat your meal, have a great time. Like, the worst that happens, you make some new friends, you learn about new wines you never had, and we've challenged you a little bit as far as like things you've never eaten or maybe flavors you wouldn't pair together normally.
So what do you like to start your day off with? Musically, when you guys get in at 9 o'clock, or is there music at the beginning of the day?
Definitely. I feel like it could go two ways in the beginning. It could be like the most quiet, peaceful music, or it could be just like crushingly heavy.
Really punch you in the face, heavy.
It could be like old ceremony. The violence.
Yeah.
Era. Or it could be like,
you know, like a really
just piano music. It
yeah,
could be like endless melancholy music for quiet mornings. Peter Broderick, Balmoray, like their instrumental.
Yeah, we could do that. There's that Mike Dylan album, Functioning Broke,
yeah,
where it's just
vibraphone.
Yeah, it's like all vibraphone and crazy. It's just beautiful. Like xylophone-ish type music, that's really awesome. You've been putting on a lot of the early AFI.
Yeah,
stuff.
Like the old AFI from like,
yeah.
You know, when they were still.
And we'll start our day off with
when they were on Nitro Records, so like Black Sails in the Sunset, Art of Drowning, that's the stuff I grew up on. There are very few things that the other puts on that
we
dislike.
I can't do this.
We're probably a 90% of the same wavelength.
Yeah, because a lot of days it'll even be like, I'll put something on and Colin's like, I was just about to put that album on. How did you know? And then it'll be vice versa as well.
Yeah. We listen to a lot of Pedro the Lion and David Bazan. We both have cooked in more casual restaurants. We were brought together by a supper club by a mutual friend started called Nani. We all quit our jobs and started cooking in a house. Everything about that supper club was a challenge. It was very just like, I mean.
It was a beat down every day.
Yeah.
Because.
It was $45. None of us made money. We were all just barely scraping by. Made like $150 a week, lived in the attic. You know, like it was.
We got up to 22 courses for $60.
Yeah, so we raised the price. It was BYOB, so people would just get so smashed.
Yeah.
People would fall asleep on the staircase. They'd throw it up in the bushes.
My favorite one, I think, is a guy came in. And someone brought like a Magnum bottle of Riesling, and then some other people brought like whiskey and scotch, as this happened a lot.
Yeah.
And everyone's just sharing and everything, which is a very cool aspect of how I was. And it was very party, like just come in, crush, and then leave. But this guy ate a couple of courses, and this is something I learned here at the restaurant. A guest told me this because they were at that dinner. And it's very hard to remember all these instances because there were a lot of them.
So frequent.
And so this guy, he goes a couple of courses in, has some wine, obviously had been pre-gaming and came in a little more toasted than he should have, turns white as a ghost, goes out the front door,
pukes in our bushes and falls asleep face down in the flower bed. And he remains there for the rest of the dinner until the people he came with found him and got him home somehow.
And I wish I could say that, like, that kind of stuff didn't happen a lot, but it did. Like, that guy could have died.
Yeah, it's terrible. And people, like he said, falling asleep on the stairs.
It was a very reckless experience on everyone's end.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, like, kind of the punk rock, like, legality thing.
Sure.
And, you know, it was half of the appeal. Like, I think back about some of the food we served, and I'm like, ooh, I don't know if...
I don't know if I'd ever do that dish again.
Can you think of any?
I mean, I don't know. A lot of the food was great. Don't get me wrong. A lot of it was so good. But I just, I feel like then we were throwing darts.
Yeah.
And I feel like now when we build dishes, we're taking all these things that we know, these points that we know about flavors and textures and ingredients. And I feel like then it was just like throwing darts.
Yeah.
You know, like.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we were literally, like, this never happens here. I remember one night I was plating up this dish, and I, like, tried it, and I was like, we can't serve. It was, like, seconds from going out. I was like, scrap it all, scrap it all. And like, we're, like, taking all these plates. Do you remember that? It was, like, that weird,
I think it was
that cabbage cream.
That cabbage sauce with, was it, were we doing the quail legs there, too? It was, like, I think it was just that one green sauce.
I don't know
like,
what it was.
But then you, like, tasted it, and you're like, no, none of this. And yeah. So we just, like, get rid of all of it.
And just went to the next course.
And just, yeah, then we just went
like
right
never
in.
Know.
Yeah. We...
But like, you have a 22-course meal,
yeah.
And you only get served 19 as a guest, you might be like, maybe it was 23, I don't remember.
So yeah, but then you get a menu, and you're like, well, I don't know about this dish.
They were too drunk.
I don't know if I had this or not.
But at Nani, it was important. You know, we delivered the food, and here we deliver the food.
Yeah, we run every dish. The servers rarely run things unless we need extra hands, and even then, we still do the explaining. Mm-hmm. If they have questions, usually their server will come get one of us.
Yeah.
We'll go out. We can chat about it for a little, as much time as we can kind of afford, because, I mean, depending on where we're at in the night, everybody's slammed. Everybody's doing that. But it's really important for us to look comfortable, look calm, look like we have all of our shit together all the time. And because that, if we look stressed out and we look frustrated, then the guests are going to be like, are they frustrated at me? And like all of these questions
arise. It's too intimate. It's too tight of a space for that, you know?
Yeah, everything has to be so orchestrated and on it. And
well, also, though, just paying attention to the music during the service is, I think, a unique aspect to what the two of you do. Because it sounds like a lot of what you're doing throughout service is also course-correcting the vibe and course-correcting the music. Is there anyone else in your team that seems to do that or can take over that mantle for you eventually?
I mean, I think our host, she's out there. So it's much louder out there.
Always. Like, I don't like this radio station. Yeah. It's not feeling good. We need to change it.
Right? Yeah.
And we're like kind of mid-cooking, like, oh, all right, like, what are we going to do?
Yeah. So I think that helps that, you know, she's out there. I mean, she's right under a speaker.
So she knows what it's feeling like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then Kyle, our GM, he's stepped in quite a bit as far as, like, let's try this. What do you guys think about playing this? And we're always, I mean, Jeremy and I, like, we love, you know, being shown new music. And so having, you know, we finally... a year in, could afford to bring a GM on. So it was, once Kyle got here, it was like, okay, you know, show us what you like.
So give me the album of the restaurant in the first.
Is there one staple for a year?
Or artist. You can go artist or album for the restaurant in the first year here of being done such.
First year.
One October that I would nominate October is probably that You Can't Stay Here by Iron Sheik.
Yeah.
That's one I would nominate.
Okay, can we have five?
Yeah, do it.
Okay,
Iron Sheik, You Can't Stay Here. Big Thief, Capacity.
Mm-hmm.
She was a shark smile in a yellow van. She came around and I stole
Would you say Dear You would be one?
Jawbreaker, Dear You. I mean, that's a classic. Why is it always like this? Even
I mean,
I feel like we listened to so much Grimes when we opened.
Art Angel would probably have to be on there. Yeah, that, because Paul would always ask for us to play
really
Art Angel.
And there's really no other place I listen to Grimes. That's four.
Mm-hmm.
We got one more.
One more.
Gotta make it count.
The Japanese breakfast.
Yeah.
That's it. Soft sounds from another planet.
Too
hot,
too cold, really.
Soft sounds from another planet.
Yeah. Soft sounds. Soft sounds from another planet.
Cool. Well, kind of what happens at the end of service, like mm-hmm. when the doors are closed, but I kind of feel like gone pretty deep.
Yeah.
I don't know. Would it change much once guests aren't here?
I mean, sometimes like Metallica, Slayer, something a little
Power Trip. I like to listen to that. Sometimes that's too much. Yeah.
But other times it's like sometimes we put Creed on like as a joke, but like leave it on for a long time.
Well, that's much longer than we should.
Go back and listen to that really chunky riff and like the bridge of My Own Prison.
Yeah, that one's
put
good.
Put that in the show. Right. That's the top.
The super chunk.
That's the top riff. It's so crispy. It's so nice. I hate myself.
Oh, goodness.
Well, wrap it up and tell me if there's anything pretentious you want to say about the relationship between music and food.
I mean, I think for people with minds that are drawn to, you know, cooking, especially in kind of a fine dining kind of setting, the dishes are creative by nature. I mean, I think it's just inevitable that people like us are gonna find a lot of joy and a lot of relate easily to music. I don't see, you know, from people that we know who do this to the places that we've been to eat at and work at, I don't see a separation of it. You know, it's inevitable. It's two very creative endeavors, and it's so easy to kind of appreciate and love and just enjoy it. It kind of becomes, you need it, you know. My wife makes a joke that, like, you know, I can't go any time without having music on. You know, it's like if I'm up in the morning brushing my teeth, it's like, oh, put something on. You know, like, I think that's probably the same for Jeremy. Like, it's just like, no matter where we are, it's on. And, but
yeah, great.
Dude, thank you so much for having us.
Thanks so much for having me.
It's a lot of fun.
Thanks to Chef Jeremy Wolfe and Colin Stringer of Nonesuch in Oklahoma City. Head to nonesuchokc.com for reservations, but be prepared to book your spot a few months in advance. You could also head over to thebluegrasssituation.com for a link to their shift list, including all the music you heard on this episode and more. If you like this episode, please give us a 5-star review and tell your friends to subscribe. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all of the places for podcasts. The Shift List is produced by me, Chris Jacobs, based on an article by the same name created by Nevin Martell, originally published over at BGS.com. Our executive producer is Amy Reitnauer, with help, as always, from the entire BGS team, including associate editor Justin Hiltner, managing editor Craig Shelburne, marketing guru Joseph Klingel, and all the amazing writers and contributors that make BGS the best source for roots culture redefined. Theme music by Jamie Drake. Check her out at jamiedrakemusic.com. The Shift List is a part of the BGS Podcast Network. Be sure to check out BGS's ever-growing collection of podcasts up right now at thebluegrasssituation.com. I'm Chris Jacobs. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Cindy Howes and Lizzie Noh from the podcast Basic Folk, honest conversations with folk musicians.
Basic Folk is truly changing the game with our well-researched deep dives that aim to empower the listener while fostering the folk community.
I basically am writing worship music for youth group rejects.
Maternal regrets and maternal guilt are universal.
I try to make things that are beautiful and that are made with like a purity of intention.
You can listen to Basic Folk on the Bluegrass Situation Podcast Network or at basicfolk.com.